Hey folks, Sam Jones here. Thanks for tuning into this podcast. And if you're new to what we are doing here at Off Camera, you might not know that we are also a television show. And if you haven't experienced the show in that format, you're really missing out on the full off-camera experience. We shoot the show in 4K black and white, and watching these conversations unfold and getting to see these iconic artists telling these stories is really what Off Camera is all about. I encourage you to check it out. You can find us on DirecTV's Audience Network. And if you don't have DirecTV, don't despair, because we have our entire archive of shows available to watch on any device by simply using our monthly subscription. For just $4.99 a month, you can have the entire off-camera library at your fingertips. Just go to offcamera.com for all the details about our monthly subscription. I'm sure you're thinking, but Sam, I'm getting the entire show for free as a podcast. And to that, I would answer yes. You are getting the entire audio track of the show, but you are missing the visual experience of off-camera, which, in my humble opinion, is an essential part of the experience. So just try it out. It's a great way to support the show, and it really is a multi-dimensional experience. And now, let's get to the show. Hey folks, Sam Jones here. Welcome to another edition of Off Camera, the show where I get to talk to iconic, creative, curious artists and find out how they got that way. And this episode, I sit down with actress Mae Whitman. Mae Whitman started her career in tears. As a two-year-old, Mae accompanied her mother, a successful voice actress, to one of her auditions, which was cut short when Mae burst into the room crying. The casting folks were sold and said, "Hey, she's really cute. Does she want to be in a commercial?" Within a few years, Mae had landed roles in films like Independence Day, Hope Floats, and One Fine Day, working with and lunching with the likes of Sandra Bullock and George Clooney. She was hooked. Though she had an early start as an actor, her life wasn't always easy. In high school, Mae was bullied, and eating lunch in the bathroom seemed like the best way to escape the incessant criticism and gossip. As Mae says, it was truly a challenge to be in this adult world of acting and then enter back into the world of school, stress, and kid stuff. For someone who had such a tough time in school, it's ironic that even a decade post-graduation, Mae still found herself in cinematic high school, playing the well-adjusted teenager with the weight of the world on her shoulders in projects like Parenthood and The Duff. And as great as she was in these roles, it's refreshing to now see Mae take on adulthood, motherhood, and burglary in NBC's new series, Good Girls. What's it like to finally act her age? Mae lets us know in one of the most intimate and honest conversations that I have ever had on this show. Stay tuned as Mae discusses why she's stalking Taylor Kitsch, aka Tim Riggins on Friday Night Lights, how a career in acting is really a test of endurance, and why she fears she might be a secret monster. So pull up a chair and listen in. Hi, Mae.
Hi, Sam.
As a way to just get started here.
Yeah.
A few weeks ago, Tim Riggins was sitting in that chair.
Well, now I gotta leave.
Does that change your body chemistry?
I just stiffened up. I don't know if you could see it on there, but I got real tense. Did he say anything about me?
He did.
He must be so afraid of me by now.
The whole hour was like, I have this stalker.
Yeah, she's really tiny, so I don't think she's going to do anything bad to me, but I can't tell. I know, he must be terrified at this point. It's just too much. It's been years of buildup. But he's so elusive, I can't quite grab him.
Yeah, you know, all I did was call him and he came right down.
Huh.
Maybe you have to try the direct
approach.
Must
be nice. I'm like, call him? I never thought of it that way. I still believe there's a place for us that we will be working together.
It's
I'm
like
gonna
West Side
not
Story.
Give up. Actually, there is. I'm like, my Riggins, I'll never stop saying my Riggins. I do. I'm going to keep fighting for it. I just think we'd be good together.
Yeah, I think so too. Why not?
I don't know. I was Tim Riggins for Halloween. I don't know if you knew that.
No, I didn't know that.
I had.
So you've brought this on yourself.
Well, yeah, sure.
The fact that I'm talking about this, it's really your fault.
It's too much. Yeah. It's too much that everywhere I go, people are like, any day now, you're going to get that Riggins. I'm like, oh, thanks, people on the street.
And you've never met Taylor Kitsch.
I haven't. I've had like passing like friends of friends. Apparently, once when I was did the Duff, he was with a friend of mine, and he saw a poster and was like, "Oh, that's that girl May's movie." And I was like, "That girl May." I like kept that with me for a while.
God, I'm really sorry we don't have him.
I'm
like,
sorry
behind
too
the wall
to pull to it out. It's probably out. It's too vulnerable. I would this show is intimate, but that's too intimate. I'd probably like an eyeball would fall out or something. It wouldn't be like, a good look. Yeah, I'd be like, "Sorry, just give me one sec."
Well, I got to tell you, he should be intimidated by you because I was looking at your, your history, and you have the credits of an 82-year-old actor.
I feel like it. I feel like an 82-year-old
do you really?
Actor.
It's crazy. You've been working for 27 years.
Yeah, it's insane. I joined SAG at 2.
I'm
a proud SAG member for 27
That's
years.
That's got to be some kind of record.
It's got to be. You would think, right?
I would think anyone else who joined SAG at 2 is washed out of the business by now.
I mean, there's got to be somebody out there, but I can't think of any, I guess, right now. It's really cool. I mean, it's mostly just good for bragging rights when I'm, like, on a set, and I'm like, "I've been doing this for 27 years, buddy." Like, that's just a great sentence
it's
to
crazy.
Whip out.
It's crazy, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I first met you, I think, like, 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And you were right at the beginning of Parenthood at that time.
Yeah, that's right.
But because I'm sort of fascinated with this idea of being a kid and working, and that, like, whether it's in a sports world or acting, I think it's a crazy thing. And I think, especially me being a parent, I just thought it'd be fun to talk about, like, what it was really like from your perspective.
Honestly, I'm finding it more and more fascinating as I get older and as I sort of transition into a more of a mother role or somebody that could have kids or whatever it is.
Right.
I'm starting to really see how crazy it is and how amazing my parents were. I really think the key is, like, my parents and my family of keeping it normal. And it's weird because I think, like, with anything, there's a light side and a dark side, and you gotta, you know, work hard to keep on the light side of things, but also respect the darkness. And I think they were so intense with their vetting processes. Like, they would talk on the phone to the people before the job and really get to know them, and we'd meet with the people. And because it is so much more when you're a kid about more than just the project and what you're, you know, your lines and the thing. It's an experience for you. And that's kind
of
how, you know, it's like, it's funny, the memories I have now when I do a project, I'm like, "Oh yeah, it was this and it was that." It's a lot more cut and dry. But back then, it's like I have this swirling sort of, like, amorphous ice cream with my dad and the thing. And then also walking around the streets and being on set and, you know, running around and exploring the prop department. And, like, it's, you're this world of wonder that you have when you're a kid, but it's expanded to the point of, like, this whole other universe that's most kids don't get to see.
Right.
I also had an amazing acting coach, Andrew McGarian, who, because I started acting before I could read. So it was like, how do you memorize the lines and stuff?
Yeah.
And he really taught me how to be really present in the moment and to make these things real. And so nothing ever felt like I'm memorizing lines, I'm doing this. It was like a real understanding. And he would do all this cool stuff of, like, using, like, balls and playing catch and talking about them as moments and how you can't, you know, you don't have the moment unless you catch it first from somebody else, and then you have it and you process it and then you give it back and this and that. So it kind of taught me this intention, you know, of internalizing this stuff as opposed to sort of having it be this overwhelming thing that just went over my head that I couldn't ride the wave, you know.
Which is a total pain now because you get a job and people don't know, like, "Oh, we have to read her the script.
I know.
Have to throw balls with her."
That's right. That's exactly right. I'm like, "Where's the ball, Sam?"
Yeah.
I thought we were going to do the ball thing. It's what I need.
But, you know, it does bring up something about, you know, most people, they start acting in high school or what, they discover a play or something, and then they go, "Oh, maybe this is something I want to do."
Yeah.
And when you start that young, it's almost like you started before you even had those kinds of thoughts of, "This is what I want to do," or, "This is what I love to do."
Absolutely.
You know, so, I mean, I wonder, did it ever change for you to, "Oh, I've been doing this forever, but I actually do like it"?
It's funny because the initial way that I even got into it was, my mom is an actor as well. And when I was 2, I went with her to an audition, and I would often go and just hang out in the waiting room and stuff. And I did once, and I ended up running in and, like, crying and ruining the audition. And they were like, "Hey, she's really cute. Does she want to be in a commercial?" And my mom was very hesitant. And I was like, I want to do it. I want to do it. Like, without even really knowing what it was.
Right, because your mom was like, I don't think
so. Of course. And so the second she's like, no, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm doing it. And I still have that personality today. But, you know, it's, I think I had, it just, it sort of rolled into, I really like people and I love talking to people and communicating. And it's such a place where you get to try a little bit of everything and you get to meet so many people and you create a family and you really get to know people on the right. crew. And to me, it's the most intrinsic thing I have. It's like the closest thing to me. It's like, it's just a part of me. It's yeah. my skeleton is this job. It's what I love more than anything. And everything being on a movie set, again, it's all mushed together for me. But it's tricky as far as just being an adult, you're right, is that you sort of make these decisions before you even know you're making decisions to have this career and all this stuff. But I find myself in other ways, like now just growing up in, you know, and being an adult. Like I think I put all my understanding of what I liked into my job. So now I'm like, what do I like in my house? And I'm trying to, is this rug nice? I don't know. Are these clothes cool? I have no idea. Like there's right. a part of me that feels like a teenager just trying to sort of form my own opinions on other things that I never really focused on growing before, you know?
Yeah, it's because I guess when the opportunities outweigh the free time and the wondering what you're going to be doing,
yeah.
then it's like, yeah, you don't have time to do that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's all good problems to have. I've never felt a moment of, like, I wish I didn't do this. And I think that's another area in which my parents were really smart is their main mission statement throughout my whole acting career was, like, if there is any time you want to stop, you want to do something else, you want to travel, you want to try something, just let us know and we're done. Like, it always felt like there was never any pressure. It was always, like, you do this until it's not fun anymore, and then you stop, and we'll figure it out. And I think that was, and you know, there's times it's hard. It's like this last pilot season, even still to this day, you would think I had like an understanding of the stress and sort of the judgment and how hard it can be and how mean it can be.
Right.
And I had this whole like thing where I had a stressful situation with a pilot and I was so sure I was going to get it. And I'd had a couple other like disappointments in a row. And then at the very last minute, I didn't get it. And I actually like, remember I was like, well, this is it. I'm really done this time. This is the end of the line. I'm never going to work in this town again. And I literally was like sitting in a bathtub, like on my laptop with my agent on the phone crying, being like, I'm going to apply for a tour guide job at Winchester Mystery House. It's in the Northern California area. I hope you come. Like, I will take you on a VIP tour. Like, you know, and he was like, just calm down.
But you were really feeling like
I really was looking at alternate things. And one thing I remember my parents sort of always teaching me was just that, like, right when you think you're never going to work again, right at that moment, it's so much a test of endurance. And I tell this to people who are just starting out or having doubts. It's like Murphy's Law, that right when you think you're never going to find something again, the second that you're willing to give up, something finds its way. And that's right when I was having that panic is right when Good Girls came up.
That's
and
so
I was
fascinating.
Like, the universe always pops in there at the last possible second and helps you out.
But you know, I hear from that, your whole history notwithstanding, you know, if you go for a couple months where things don't go your way, it's almost like you can't look at your history and
no.
go, I'm going to be fine.
Utter panic. It's total
and utter
panic.
Do you think that's a trait of actors or a trait of human beings?
I mean, honestly, I know it's a trait of actors because all my actor friends feel the same way. And even when I'm like, you know, even after Good Girls, it was a really long shoot. It was very intense. And I was like, I am going to take a break, baby. I'm going to just lay around with nothing to do.
I've earned it.
Yeah, I can't wait to just laze around. And then I'm like, get back for 2 days. And I'm like, anything looking good on your end over there? Like, I immediately get this restless feeling when I'm not working. And I guess like when you're an artist or when you have a job that there's no logical steps that you know you can take to keep progressing and maintain your job. It's not like math. I think with anybody, there is that anxiety because you really are just off the ridge. There's no safety net. It's very hard for me to relax and turn off and not be super anxious about getting another job.
And obviously you've passed this threshold, but there's certainly that child actor thing where at a certain point
you age out of it. Haggard watching the next generation come up. I'm like, I could have done that part better with the cigarette and stuff. This has been a struggle definitely my whole life. And I think especially when I was going from being like a preteen to a teenager, because that's such a specific time where you go from kind of being one of the only kid actors out there that can do it. And I was just like, I can do everything and it's all based on talent and here I go cruising along. And then you sort of hit puberty and it kind of becomes more about your looks, and there's a whole bunch of other people flooding in from other places in other states trying to do it, and you're a little like, but I don't understand, and I was already here. Yeah, it's, you know, you definitely have that little piece of you that wants to feel that way. You know, you start to feel like, well, what do I have, like you were saying, that, you know, that other people don't have, and why would I get this? And it really is about so that stuff. There's so much noise that can come in your head when you're an actor, and stress, and you show up at the audition and everybody looks so great and my mascara is running, and what if I don't, you know, do the thing right? And it really is like, you just have to focus on being your best self and knowing who you are and being honest in your own thing. And that's really when it comes, because there is something, it feels like you're all trying to squeeze into this same little box, but really there's something that every individual person has that nobody else has. And I really feel like it's important to work on honing that. And if it's like, well, all right, I'm not going to get the role of, you know, this person, this, I don't really fit in that box, that's okay. Because it's such a good feeling when you actually work with somebody after a whole life of kind of being the misfit and the weird girl and people not really knowing exactly where to put me. It feels so nice when you meet somebody that's like, I get you, I like you, I want to do cool stuff with you.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, if you can sort of be gentle on yourself when somebody doesn't get it and get who you are, and just kind of be like, all right, well, peace, good luck. So I sort of feel like I feel lucky that I at least have enough of a perspective. Doesn't mean it doesn't hurt when they're like, you're not pretty enough for this role or some other thing like that. I'm always like, okay, thank you very much. I'm going to move on. You know, it's always painful, but you sort of let the emotions of it pass and sort of roll off your back, because you know underneath your undercurrent is strong.
Did you ever get to a point where you're like, oh my God, I lost the plot. I don't know, like...
Totally.
Like when it went from a gut feeling to, oh, I have to intellectualize this or
Absolutely.
Something.
When you are a kid, you don't have all this extra stuff that you're thinking about and the
You don't
noise.
Think, can I trust that or don't I trust that?
Right.
You just do.
You just do it. And also you're not like, well, I mean, how do I look? And am I saying the right thing? And there is just so much less noise and awareness of things to be scared about or nervous about or anxiety ridden about. And I find, you know, even for auditions now, I used to be like, wee, a chance to go in and do what I love to do for 15 minutes and then say hi to people and then leave. And now I'm like, like driving to the West Side, just like, oh my God, I can't do this. My hair looks bad and they're going to think I'm a joke. Like it's like a total like nightmare for me. Even still, again, people are like, you must really have it down by now. And I'm like, no, I feel like a total nightmare. I'm like, my neck is so stiff. It's really hard when you sort of start having more of an awareness. But I kind of try to like go back to that other thing, even if I'm faking it till I make it, of, you know, what it felt like to be a kid of just like.
Can you still tap into that?
I think I can. It's hard. And it takes, for me, it's all about kind of like preparing for the moment. Like I don't like to, like, if I have sides for an audition, I don't like to like over prepare them, and I don't like to obsess over them and just read the words over and over again. I like to kind of like.
Because kid, you wouldn't have, right?
No, you do, and plus it brings to me, for me, like a little staleness to it. Like I like to kind of keep things like a little fresh and a little unknown, and I'd prefer to get myself in the best headspace beforehand so that whatever happens in there is truthful, rather than feel like I'm trapped, you know, by something that I've already thought has to be a certain way in my head before I do it, you know? So to me, it's kind of like, go lay in the park and read a book before an audition, or have like...
Can you allow yourself to do that?
Mm-hmm.
I think when you're young, the upside is you know how to play, and maybe you get to stay in touch with that great part of all of us, which is non-judgmental imagination and without a self-critic in your head. But were there times in your life when you just wanted to quit and there had to be a discussion with your parents about contracts or commitments? And
I mean, it's funny. I think about this almost more now. My child acting career was really pretty smooth. To me, it was more like, how do I get out of going to school? I was like such so not a school person. I hated it. I loved learning. I was super nerdy, like got bullied in a big way and like very like academic. And I hated going to school. I hated school functions. I hated, especially as I got sort of older. And again, those sort of more self-aware thoughts start to come into play. But I do think now reflecting, I'm like, it must be strange because to me, in a way, I'm sure it's affected. I'm like very into learning now about my psychology and how that stuff affected me back then, because it's a weird thing. And I think about like how, you know, to me, school, I was like, school's not that important. I have a job tomorrow. Like I'd be at school and they'd be like, I know, but can you believe the dress that he, you know, and I was like, who cares? I got to be up at 6 a.m. tomorrow. I got a call time here. Like, let's get this going, you know? So it's sort of like it made, however, for better or for worse, that I was kind of like, this isn't that important. I have a job. I have to be there. This is the real thing. So I think that's tricky too, though, because then how do you maintain your perspective of your real life? Because then it sort of becomes like acting is everything, your job is everything, and you do have these very heavy responsibilities. I think like I've had a lot of responsibilities since I was a little kid.
Well, it makes me wonder when you kind of clocked that you were different than other kids.
Yeah.
Like, is there an example of a time when it kind of hit you that you just didn't have the same life?
Yeah, I mean, when I started out, the kids were like, yeah, cool, whatever, no big deal. And then around middle school, they sort of started to become more like, you think you're so cool because you blah, blah, blah. And I was like, really? I'm in like culottes with like frizzy hair and like dirt on my face. But yeah, I think I'm so cool. Like, it just sort of took on this like weird beast, and I kind of went from blending into the middle of everybody and being friends with everybody to sort of like, you know, everybody's like, there's a system and you fall into it or you fall out of it. And it's, you know, that people are so desperate to compartmentalize at that age, I think, that it's like I sort of didn't fit anywhere because I was nerdy and not around all the time, and that they were kind of like, we're going to bully you. That's it. You're going to be bullied. There were times where I was like eating lunch in the bathroom, in the girls' bathroom by myself, like on a chair. And I was like, this isn't working. Like, just that was kind of one of the first moments.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's brutal. Especially now there's kids with the social media and the stuff. Like, how do your kids do it?
Oh, I'm terrified. That part is about to happen for both my young kids, and it's terrifying. And you know, it's funny, I watched The Duff 2 nights ago.
Oh, cool.
Knowing that you were coming here.
Yeah.
And I have to say, that film totally took me by surprise. It turned out to be something that brought up a lot of memories for me about my own high school experience.
I'm so glad.
Because I was a really little kid, really late bloomer, bullied, the whole thing.
Yeah.
And also thinking about my daughters and this idea that when something happens on a shameful level in high school now, within, you know, a day, it can be all
have
over campus.
Forever. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
But I was watching this and then hearing you talk about your own experience, I wondered when you got that script.
Yeah.
What you had to think about in order to sort of prepare for the character.
Yeah, I mean, that was a very special thing for me because, again, that subject matter, and people, you know, it's funny, people see that and they're like, oh, the designated ugly fat friend, and everybody has a different response. They're like, well, you're not ugly or you're not fat. And I was like, well, I was called ugly and fat in high school. Nobody is ugly or fat or gross or whatever the thing is. That was kind of the whole point of that movie to me was, you know, I think, again, I moved through school never really changing myself, and I was still in the culottes and the hair and the thing and such a tomboy and this and that. And I think, like, it's more, to me, it was when I first got that, it felt representative of exactly what I went through and what I want other people who are weird or who would look at somebody like me and be like, oh, I bet it's really great and I bet you never had this, or I bet, you know, I could never be on TV or whatever it is. And it's like, it was so important to me. The amount of people I got coming up to me after that were so strange and beautiful and smart and funny and weird and crazy, that were like, that made me feel better and I felt less alone in my thing, because if you got made fun of that way or this or that, like, it just felt like I had like this group of friends that felt better. And that movie really to me was about communicating. And it's tricky because it is this tricky subject matter where I wanted to make sure that the heart was in it in every single moment of explaining that this, you know, the girl never really changes. She kind of has a moment where she goes, oh, if there's an easier way to do this, I am down. And that's like, right. I would too. I'd be like, well, maybe if I wear this, I remember in my first day of ninth grade, I was wearing my culottes. I can't believe I've said culottes this many times in an hour. But
if we were that kind of show, a hashtag would come
hashtag,
up.
I'm going to rip these pants off and there's going to be like culottes underneath it at the end. But I was wearing my culottes and I remember this girl passed a note sitting in front of me, like looked back and passed a note to this other girl sitting in front of me. And I saw it and it was like said some, you know, snarky thing about my culottes and how I would never wear a skirt and I was this and that. And I was like, I am going to wear a skirt tomorrow. And I wore a skirt the next day and I was like so strange. The airflow was all wrong. I was like so felt so vulnerable and confused. And it didn't make anything better. They just found something else to make fun of me for. And it was kind of like, okay, there's no changing your perspective. And that was kind of the thing that I really wanted to come out of that movie was, look, you can do whatever you want. You can slap on the makeup. You can do the thing. You can act a certain way. But there's if somebody feels the need to compartmentalize you in a way that is diminutive, they're going to find a way to do it because it's not about you at all. It's about them and their need to do that.
Right.
And so it's more about being like, oh, that must be such a bummer for you to feel like you need to make other people feel small in order for yourself to feel okay. But I'm good. I'm just not going to take that on because it happens to everybody. The people you think are the best looking, the most successful, whatever it is, everybody's had some element of this in their life. And
right.
I guess it was just very important to me that we did it exactly right and with love and understanding and compassion and really made sure that that message came across in a really specific way. And I still get people who are like, I'm glad that my kids could watch this because it made them feel okay about being weird or doing whatever they wanted to do. And I wore a lot of my own wardrobe in the movie, like my 90s jeans and my, like, you know, my overalls and no makeup. And that's just very much who I was. And I feel like we were saying sort of being a kid, you don't question that stuff until somebody else makes you question it. And being like, well, yeah, what's wrong with overalls? There's so many pockets and they're not going anywhere because you got the straps. Like, it's a great thing. And then somebody sort of makes you feel self-conscious about it.
You know, you've hit the heart of it for me. And I think, like, my 12-year-old still would look at a pair of overalls in exactly that way.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God, I can put pencils there and I can
know.
Put food in this, you know, yes. some gummy bears maybe.
Totally.
And it's true. This is the hardest thing for me about adolescence is that you start being made fun of the things that naturally make you unique.
That's right.
And then we have to spend the next 10 years, 20 years trying to get back to what made us unique, lovable people in the first place.
That's right.
And I think about your perspective on that being, you know, in a way, it's interesting being out in the real world for as long as you were. You did have a larger perspective on the world.
Yeah.
So I would think it'd be an odd thing to be bullied by people in high school when probably part of you understood
of course
that behavior.
And that was another thing that I wanted to have come across in the movie was just the fact that there is a perspective, like there is a bigger world, I promise. I mean, first of all, I know very few people who had like a really successful time in high school that, you know, want to go back that are also like having a great time now or that, you know, I feel like it's just such a big world. And if you're not doing well, it feels, but when you're a kid and you don't have that perspective, of course you feel
that's the
like
whole world.
This is the end.
Yeah.
I'm never, and this is probably exactly what the real world's going to be like. And I'm going to be stuck in this thing, you know, cause it does, it hurts. It still hurts me to every, you know, I walked past like a group of teenagers the other day and one of them like looked at my pants and snickered and I was like, and I like ran home and like cried in my bed for 10 minutes. It's like that stuff still hurts. But again, I'm not going to like not wear those pants because some stupid teenager said that about me. You know, that's right. I'm not.
You
know, I threw them in the trash.
It's crazy. Like also when I think of the meta level of all this where you were what, 26 when you made that movie? And
yeah.
You go back and you have to like.
Oh, it's crazy.
You have to act. You have to almost remove mm-hmm. the parts of your brain that know more
that's
to
right.
be able to embody a teenager.
That's right. And in a way, it's harder because you do have all this extra stuff and you have to strip it away. And I think in general, stripping stuff away is harder than adding it on. But I also think in a way it was easier because I did have the perspective and I was far enough removed from it that I could see sort of the whole picture and know how I wanted to communicate it well to people. So it was nice that I was going back to that situation with a very loving and compassionate, I mean, for like all the money in the world, I would not go back to high school. I literally can't believe that people can do it, especially with camera phones and social media. I can't even believe it.
I know.
It gives me like, I'm like sweating just thinking about it. I don't know how they do it. So definitely, I think I was happy to have that perspective and hope that maybe it could bring a little sense of a through line that people that were stuck in that situation could see and go, okay, maybe if I, even if I do try these things, or even if I get made fun of, or even if I feel out of place and, you know, try a bunch of different versions of me, this core thing remains that I'm going to keep going and shoot out of high school and then let, just take all the good stuff with me and leave all the bad stuff behind.
Right. I would think that probably a large portion of your high school career was spent trying to get people to understand that you weren't the thing they thought you were.
Definitely.
Like, did you feel misunderstood? Like, on top of the bullying, did you feel misunderstood?
Oh, for sure. I mean, and it's hard, again, like, communicating with people in high school is so difficult, too, especially when you've sort of, like, honed your communication skills with grown-ups for your whole
right.
life. Then, you know, coming to a kid that's, like, throw sand in your face and being like, I'd like to have a chat. Let's talk, you know, logically.
What was that like?
It's like hard. And, you know, I think in a way I had some good moments with it. And in some ways it was a challenge. It was really truly a challenge, like to have to go be in this adult world and then re-enter back into this sort of world of like gossip and stress and kid stuff.
God, I hear you say that. And it occurs to me that you probably were having to practice some sort of diplomacy all the time because you were an outsider in high school.
Yeah.
But then you were also sort of an outsider on film sets,
totally.
Too, because you're a kid and you're working with adults. And
mm-hmm. And
so you were constantly having to sort of, I don't know if what the word is, model or...
Mm-hmm.
or
adapting, for sure. That was like always one of my skills. Was like, and it's, you know, it's my defense mechanism too. Is like, I'll go to a party and I'm like sort of like awkward socially sometimes. And I'll be like, okay, like I can do this. What's, you know, that guy, he's got a tan. He looks like he lives at the beach. Let's go talk about the beach. I'll do this. Like, it's kind of like, I'm always looking for something to relate to people about.
What you're describing is, you know, for a good portion of your life, wherever you went, there was pressure.
Yeah. And in some places I'm so far behind with my peers, and that's really where my friend group comes in to like be there and pick me up and help me understand things. And it's even more frustrating in a way because, like we said, now that I'm older and self-aware, I have judgment about it. And I'm like, why can't you get this? Why are you not further along? Why don't you understand this base thing of being a grown-up or whatever it is? And then in, you know, other ways, there's things that I'm like, oh, yeah, I went through that feeling, and I went through the feeling of this pressure that can be very consuming or overwhelming. And, you know, you just have to be gentle to yourself and to your body and really, like, treat yourself well so that you get enough energy back to remember that you're exactly in the place that you want to be. So, like, even in my times of the most stress and pressure, I'll take 10 minutes and go sit in a bathroom and be quiet. And
eat your lunch.
And eat my lunch. Like the hero I am. And yeah, and then, you know, you go back out and it's great. And it's sort
you
of
just
like...
flush your sandwich down
I
if you don't
it right
finish
down,
it.
Right along with all my self-doubt. Flush it all down the toilet.
That makes me so sad thinking of you sitting in high school in the bathroom eating
there
lunch.
There was a bad, bad, bad chair in there that was like covered in fabric and God only knows what the people did in there. I can't even... I've moved on. I have to let it go. It's too upsetting to me to even think about in the culottes eating the sandwich. It's just, it's not good.
You know, but it is interesting to think about that image and go, okay, the life people thought you had, and you're so lucky. And that other thing of like, I'm so lucky, I can't complain about
right.
this.
Right, but I think I got really good at, in my early 20s, letting myself have complaints, finally, because I think that was something I didn't really... feel okay about for a long time.
You pleased people for so long,
yeah.
Probably, because as a kid, you're like, oh, if I make that director happy and stuff,
yeah.
I get to do another, I get to
That's
have
right.
another job. At that point, it's not about how good of an actor you are compared
right.
to the next kid, right?
Very true. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think that was a big thing for me too. Also therapy, like starting therapy for me was so helpful. I loved it so much because it's completely non-judgmental. You're just in there with somebody who doesn't know you at all, doesn't have any say of anything, and you can really be as ugly as you want or be as, you know, progressive as you want, or you can, there'll be days where I'll just go in there and just be like, I don't really feel like doing anything right now. I just kind of want to sit here and complain about, you know, some stupid shit. And I think that to me was just, is like invaluable. But I also have such a good core group of best friends. I have like 7 people probably around me that I can genuinely be, that love me unconditionally, which is like a gift from the universe, that I can just be anything and talk about anything with, and even stuff that I would be afraid to get off my chest in the past, you know, is received with such warm, loving arms that's really been like a life-saving thing for me to kind of create those lifelines and nurture those relationships.
Hey folks, Sam Jones here. Has your company outgrown QuickBooks? Are shared spreadsheets, manual processes, and legacy systems costing you time and money? Well, now's the time to move your business to the cloud. Introducing NetSuite by Oracle, the business management software that handles every aspect of your business in an easy-to-use cloud platform. With NetSuite, you can save time, money, and unneeded headaches by managing sales, finance and accounting, orders, and HR instantly, right from your desk or even your phone. Thousands of the best-known brands and fastest-growing companies use NetSuite to manage their business. And now it's available to you. The power of the world's most popular cloud management system is more affordable than you think. Right now, NetSuite is offering you valuable insights to overcome the obstacles that are holding you back. For free. Don't miss out on unleashing your business's full potential with this free guide, Crushing the 5 Barriers to Growth. You'll learn how to acquire new customers, increase profits, and finally get real visibility into your cash flow. Get NetSuite's guide, Crushing the 5 Barriers to Growth, when you go to netsuite.com/offcamera. That's netsuite.com/offcamera. So check that out. And now let's get back to the show.
I think about Parenthood, and that show, I would think, for an actor, would be the best experience of all, because the focus of that show is on transferring human emotions.
Correct, yeah.
Right? And I was curious if that experience was not only different from anything else you've done, but also maybe cathartic in a way.
Absolutely. Parenthood especially, you know, it's rare that you get to see a girl that was my age going through that stuff for that weird time period of going from being 16, going from being sort of a petulant, brooding teenager to being 23 and being a mom, a young mom. And
right.
That is like, you don't see those years of trying to figure out who you were and what panicking about money and moving out and having first love. And, you know, that is such a specific, strange time period that I felt so happy, because the feedback we get from Parenthood the most is I felt so much less alone going through what I was going through, seeing that you guys were going through it too. And that feels amazing, because yes, we were acting and yes, we were on a show, but so much of ourselves was in that show. And everybody was so amazing that you go in there and you just try to get yourself into the place of being the most honest person you can be and being ready and reactive. And another cool thing with that show is that we shot with 3 cameras. So oftentimes they would hide the cameras in the room so we could get cross coverage. So
right,
you'd
right.
see all the stuff at the same time. So all the reactions are genuine. It's not like what it usually is, where the cameras are facing one direction and then you do everybody's stuff on one side and then you turn around and redo it and do everything there, which it just breeds a different sort of presentness when you can get stuff as it's happening in the moment. And for that, there were days where I would just go home and stare at a wall for 3 hours and then go to sleep, because you're so present and you're giving so much of your own real stuff. But it was such a gift, because like you said, it was so cathartic. It was like therapy. And I, you know, oftentimes would walk away with such a clearer understanding about an issue that I was having. And again, you know, it bred relationships. I mean, Lauren Graham is still like my best friend. And Miles Heiser, who played my little brother, is
right.
my roommate still. We see each other every day. You know, and Dax and Kristen are like family to me. And I think you get a really close bond when you are partners in something that is very fresh and unknown. And you go in together and you build something together, sort of from the ground up.
Yeah.
You'll always have those bonds, you know.
Well, it's like that idea of when we watch a show, we do want to believe these people are real, and we want to believe that there's something real happening.
I mean, 1,000,000%. And I say that with all honesty about Parenthood. That is like, and I say it with, you know, again, little elements of other projects I've done, I'm like, oh, that, you know, I was feeling this that day and this and that. Like, there's something vulnerable that's mine in everything. But with Parenthood, it was like a daily occurrence. Every month, every year, we cared so much about these people. I mean, we literally, we even as the actors, because usually, you know, you get a script, you look at it, you memorize the stuff, you go in and you do it. And with this, you don't really think about it, like, as far as second guessing or you know, and this we felt so fiercely protective over the people because we so much of ourselves was in these characters that, you know, oftentimes, I mean, I remember one time doing an episode in like season six or something, and there was a part about a boat, and I was like, oh, but we can't because Amber's afraid of boats, because remember in season one, she said the thing with the thing and the thing, and everybody was like, oh, yeah, okay, whatever. Like, but, you know, to me, I'm like, this is my person. I have to protect this person. And I think especially when that set was so, talk about, like, governing with love or fear, that set was so trusting and open and cohesive and free, and really, Jason led us with so much love and trust. He kind of put this group of people together and said, go, like, I trust you, I love you. And he was always there for us if we had tonal questions or whatever it was, and to kind of shape it into something. But a big part of us is in there, and a big part of our words and our, you know, and everybody's like, you cried so much. And I was like, yeah, I didn't mean to. When you get in a room with Craig T. Nelson, who's like this open, walking, raw nerve of like love, and who would cry at lunch tables telling you how much he loved you and stuff, I mean, you're gonna cry. And he says something to you in the room that you didn't expect. I mean, we had scenes like the scene at the junkyard where after Amber gets in her car accident, Craig, you know, the whole scene was he's supposed to take her there and give her a speech about being careful and this and that. And Craig was like, after the rehearsal, he was like, I'm going to just say whatever I want, so be ready. And I was like, okay. And, like, you know, I get in there, and he had written and made up this whole speech about that I know was so much a part of him, about how when he was in the war, he, you know, dreamt about his grandkids and that we were his dreams and I can't mess with his dreams. And I know that, that a big part of that was from his own experience in real life. And it was so beautiful and powerful that I totally lost it. And so, again, you know, that stuff is so present and so real and meant so much to us that I really feel like it's almost hard to watch because there's like so much stuff in there that
it feels autobiographical.
Is really raw and really painful. And even the stuff that doesn't quite add up storyline wise, I know exactly what I was going through at the time. And I think luckily we were able to put stuff out there that at the very least you can know is very, very honest and connected for everyone involved.
Jason talked about crying in the edit room.
Yeah. Everyone was crying. You'd finish a take and the camera guy would be like, you know, there was like, it was an emotional thing.
Yeah.
You know? As life is, such is life.
But I wonder about that because obviously you've been acting since you were a little kid. You've been asked to cry for,
sure,
since you were five. But what I'm curious about with that is, first off, when something happens naturally like that and there is a piece of coverage to do or there is room for another take to see if you can better it or whatever, are you able to do that in the same way? I mean, because I think that's such an interesting thing to find an emotion in a totally honest way,
mm-hmm.
but then sort of have to examine that or
absolutely
or improve on
it. Yes, or, you know, exacerbated or whatever it is. I mean, it's very tricky. And again, this is something my acting coach always taught me. He refers to it as opening boxes. And he's like, you're going to have to open a box or two for this one. And like, and it's not always fun and it's unpleasant and it's painful.
Opening a box,
like
meaning
a personal box that you've maybe something painful in your past or an understanding or an emotion that you've tucked away because it's not a place that you want to live in all the time.
Right.
You know, a memory or whatever. And he's like, but don't forget that at the end of the day, you're going to close the box and like, that's okay. And that, you know, it's, and I think it is hard when you're doing a lot of emotional work because it's harder to close the box. But that's what part of the job is that balance, is knowing sort of how deep to go into it and how much to give, and then sort of giving yourself a break as far as being gentle when you have to pull yourself back out of it. And
gosh, you know, I feel like with the length of your career, how many boxes do you have left?
Oh man, it's like that warehouse in Indiana Jones, you know, with like the millions of things going
by. May's brain, it's just like some guy in a forklift. Okay, we're gonna get box number 3629B.
It's true. It really is exactly like that. Yeah.
No, but I wonder about that too. With someone who for a living examines emotions and plays with them and modulates them.
Yeah.
Do you ever find yourself in a real life situation? I don't know if you're having to sit down and have a serious relationship talk or break up with somebody or something, or you're giving some impassioned speech. Is part of you like sitting over here going, I think you're hamming it up a little bit?
Yeah. And but it's the worst.
Is it weird?
There's a tiny part of me that wonders, especially because it's so in me being this actor. And to be an actor, you have to observe. That's how you learn. That there's a little part of me that's like, am I like a total sociopath? I just wonder, because I don't feel it when I'm having those conversations. I'm usually not like, oh, if I was filming this, I'd go with a, you know, wide angle. Like, I usually don't go, it's not, that doesn't
creep.
Pop up. I'm like, would I do a push in or a pull out? I just can't tell. But for the most part, it's more the fear that that's in there is the thing that trips me out. Is I'm like, but what if I can never actually completely be present in a thing because I'm always a little bit outside of it and ready to communicate it. But I don't know. I wonder about that too. I wonder if there's some, of course. And especially I think because I'm such a deep feeler and things feel so like really deep down in there when they happen to me that it scares me more where I'm like, am I a secret monster that can never actually be totally present anywhere or that can never, I just wonder what it's like to be completely out of your own skin sometimes. I don't know if I've ever felt it or maybe I have, I just don't know. I might be a secret monster.
Makes total sense because unlike someone who went to acting school in their 20s mm-hmm. or teens and had to go, okay, how do I learn how to do this?
Right.
You've been sort of dipping into that territory since before you knew it was territory.
Totally.
And so I would think that it would be like, are emotions real
you
or did I invent them?
You have to learn to undo it. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It is. It's weird. And I would say, again, like I don't struggle with it on the regular, but I definitely, it's like a little creepy fear in the back of my brain just wondering. I mean, I think this is also why I'm like so fascinated by psychology and like the base stuff. My therapist is always like so annoyed because I'm like, what about an ink blot test? Like, you know, and she's like, no, that's not, we don't need to do, you know, but I'm like, I want to know every mathematical brain situation and what, how do things affect and emotions and.
You want proof because you're wondering, did I create all of this?
Totally.
Yeah.
It's like the friggin' Truman Show. No, it's not at all.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think that on top of doing this your whole life, you also look younger than your age and have for a long time. And obviously that's how you're able to play a high school senior or junior when you're 26 years old. But I think what's interesting about this new show, Good Girls, is you finally get to play a full-fledged, messy adult that's the same age as you are.
Yes. There's something personally validating as far as like, oh, this is fun to be actually in the place that I'm in instead of having to make myself think of a different headspace. But I have to
or
say...
Or make out with like an 18-year-old dude.
I'm like, well, that's the best part. I mean...
You're like some weird, like, cradle-robbing professional woman.
The tiniest little heart thief. No, I like, I think in general...
You're like nine actors' first kiss.
It's true. That's so creepy when you put it like that, but it really is true. I'm like shifting in my chair. It's nice. It's a new perspective for me. Something else to take to therapy. No, I think it is cool because, but it's weird because this character, Annie, who is my age, is by far the least mature of, I think, all the characters I've played.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's this funny thing where it's flipped on its head where yes, she's my age, but she is almost like her development was arrested back in high school when she had her kid. You know, and she's somebody who had this child at when she was 16 or 17.
Yeah.
And so I think that is kind of where her brain stopped growing and she just had to totally focus on raising this kid. And so it's this funny combination where, yes, she's acting her age and I can sit more comfortably in my body in that way and my
way I
communicate.
Or at least you have your own house.
I have my own house. I have a car. This was a big thing too is like I'm so used to sitting in the passenger seat of a car and looking up at like a screen mom and now I'm in the driver's seat and I look at my kid and I'm like, oh my God, this is such a weird, I'm so used to turning this way instead of this way. That's kind of a nice thing.
The little like, things.
There's
You're
little
like,
things
oh,
like
my
that.
Neck works
a
this
house
way.
Key, you know,
right.
things like that. But it is funny that the person I play is usually like, oh, I'm so torn because I'm just so wise beyond my years. You know, I'm aching to get out of this teenage body and make a change. You know, there's like, it's usually that kind of like weight of the world on the shoulders teenager. And now it's the opposite, which is also the coolest thing ever, because I feel like in general, I don't get to play the wild, spontaneous one. I don't get to sort of like leap before I look. I don't get to not completely obsess over every decision or thing, you know, before I make it. The characters I play just aren't that way. And in a way, neither am I. And I think I've grown up in this sort of like very indecisive and tentative way, and I need to pragmatically think about every single way that something's going to play out before I choose to do it, and how it's going to affect everyone, and what the, you know, I'm like so obsessive in that way,
right,
that in a way I feel like this role is really teaching me to sort of be more spontaneous and to trust my intuition for better or for worse, and just loosen up a little bit and not be really much more present in the moment and sort of see where that moves me. It's been encouraging me to do that more in my life, which is really nice for a change.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's also ironic that the last network television show you did, you played a teenager to a young mom, mm-hmm. and now you're playing a mom to a...
Yeah.
A young mom to a teenager.
Yeah, and in a way, it's funny because it's almost got elements of Gilmore Girls to it, where it's sort of like the child and the parent help raise each other
right,
through the years
right.
and they become friends, which is, you know.
And the reason that this show is unique and different and really intriguing to me is there's an episode with you and your daughter, played by Izzy Stanard, mm-hmm. who's in transition,
yeah.
right? And so she's sort of dressing like a boy and figuring out her identity. And there's an episode where you come into her room and her clothes are all over the place and you're late for school. And she says, I can't find anything to wear. And you're like, I just bought you these pants. They fit perfect. And she says, no, they're too loose. And it dawns on you that the kids at school are pulling down her pants to find out what she is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like this heartbreaking scene in the middle of this feminist power gang caper.
Yeah.
But it's the most real exchange. And it made me curious about what you do for yourself to prepare to have that, you know, obviously there's a relationship there between you as an actor mm-hmm. and Izzy as an actor.
So Izzy, who identifies as male, he plays Sadie. And Izzy and I immediately connected in a really serious way. Izzy is so intuitive and so sensitive. And again, it's funny now to be in this position where I know what it's like to be a child on a set and I know exactly what that feels like, but I'm on the other end of it. So you never know what you're going to get when you're working with someone that young, because oftentimes they have fears, they're uncomfortable to be there, they're defensive, or even just teenagers in general, there can be sort of a insensitivity or whatever it is. I felt the way meeting Izzy that I felt when I first met Miles Heiser, which I met Miles before Parenthood when he was 13 or 14. And I remember being like, ugh, I'm, you know, a 13-year-old boy, like nightmare. He's going to be all weird with hanging out with an old lady like me, et cetera. And he was like the most calm, kind, open, nice, sensitive, present force of anyone that I've ever met. And I had that same feeling with Izzy, but it does help to sort of know I've always loved kids anyway, and I think it helps to know what it feels like to walk onto that set and just be so open and vulnerable in every way. And it just feels good to have somebody there that you trust and love, and I'm really glad I can be that person for him.
Well, it also gives perspective on what the adults might have been thinking when you were 13
totally.
Or whatever.
There's this fear of that makes people sort of cringe and be afraid, when in actuality it's like the biggest gift. And again, that's why I'm thankful for improv or Parenthood or whatever it is you don't have to be afraid of things you don't know. And that's such a gift in every walk of life. And I'm like so glad I can take that with me, and that even in those moments where you're not sure what it's going to be, you know, they say like never work with like babies or dogs. That's like the classic thing, is like babies, kids, or dogs, because it's like you never know what they're going to do and it's unexpected. But again, you can use all those wonderful things. Like sometimes that's the best stuff, is when a kid throws something at you in a scene that you don't see coming and you just use it and you're present and it's exciting to me now to have things that are unknown and there's a wild quotient in it, because you, again, you surround yourself with putting yourself in the right place to receive and be honest in those moments with whatever comes, that you don't have to be afraid, because whatever you do in that moment will be honest to the person.
Right. Well, it's beautiful that you get an opportunity now to sort of shepherd a young actor through those years, where I'm sure at times for you were lonely because you probably were the only kid on
set.
Yeah,
it's funny too, because I think back and I'm like, I used to wonder sort of in the in-between, like, God, I can't believe, because I hung out with a lot of actors, and I mean like hung out. Like I would like every day go to my parents and be like, I'm going to eat lunch in Sandy's trailer, like Sandra Bullock's trailer. I like ate lunch with her in her trailer every day when I was 8 years old. And I could see my parents, they would like take me to the door and be like, if she's annoying you, if you need a break, blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, ew, you guys are so lame. Like, you don't understand our relationship. Get out, you know? And like, but again, it's like, I would do the same thing. I'd be like, if, you know, to my own kid, I'd be like, if you want a break, if da, 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 da. But it's funny how what I took away from all those relationships was really, I never felt annoyed. Like they took me in, and you know, most people were so warm and welcoming.
What a fascinating and strange life you've had.
Tell me about it. This has been like more therapy than I even knew was going to happen. It's like feels really great.
Well, you know, as much as I feel like I knew you before, it's really great to hear from your perspective what this whole journey's been like. So
thanks, Sam. I always thought you were so super cool. Like getting to hang out with you on the Perks of Being a Wallflower photo shoot. It was like, I remember having such a kindred spirit with you because we had like the exact same
connected.
Music taste.
I know.
You were playing like, it was like Pavement or like a John Bryan cover or something. And I was like, I like totally flipped out. And
yeah, you were the only person on that shoot that liked the music. Everyone else was like.
I think they were. They were like, can we get some Katy Perry?
Exactly. We're like, no.
It's true. We were playing like Morphine or something. And they were like asking for
the topics. Like, this is the most depressing photo shoot ever.
And I was loving it. So I definitely have always respected you so much. And I'm.
Thank you.
I'm glad that we got to hang out.
Right back at you. And thanks for doing this.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Hey folks, that's our show for this time. I hope you enjoyed that. You can see May on NBC's Good Girls right now, and I also encourage you to check out her work in Parenthood and in films like Perks of Being a Wallflower, The Duff, and the excellent indie film Operator, also starring Martin Starr. You know, thank you so much for listening to the show, and here's the part where I tell you all about how to get more off camera, how to support the show, and how to show your love for the show to the world. And then make sure to stay tuned for a preview about next week's guest. So if you were liking what you were hearing, please go to the off-camera website and dive into the off-camera experience. Definitely try out our monthly subscription and also check out our magazine and our book available on the off-camera store. Our magazine is our literary companion to the show, and we make an exclusive issue for everyone that comes on, complete with never-before-seen photographs of each guest. We have a whole archive of back issues for purchase, and even some signed copies. We also have a coffee table book entitled Off Camera, The Portraits, which is a collection of my photography of all the iconic artists that have appeared on the show. This beautiful book makes a great addition to your library and also a great gift. We have some signed copies left, and I will even inscribe a personal message if you send me an email after purchase. How's that for service? Speaking of that, you can reach me by email at sam@offcamera.com. You can send me guest suggestions, comments, or just tell me why you listen to the show. And you can tell others about the show through our social media channels. We are Off Camera Show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And I am Sam Jones Pictures on Instagram and Sam Jones on Twitter. And if you follow my Instagram, you know that I post outtakes from our off-camera photo shoots. And it's a great way to see what's happening behind the scenes here at the show. I want to thank everyone that works hard on off-camera. Crawford Shippey, our resident adult in the room and publicist whisperer. Nathan Shields, our multitasking editor and sound man. Makaysha Galvanowski, our graphics and literary department head. Sasha Snow, our studio manager and numbers cruncher. Kara Johnson, who writes down everything everyone says. And Matt Davidson, who slipped in the back door and now we can't get him to leave. So, if you want him, you can have him. And most of all, thank you for listening to this continuing experiment, which is currently going on its 5th year. Thanks for sticking with us, and please tell your friends. And be sure to join me next week when I sit down with actor, writer, director, and musician, Josh Radner.
The thing about this business I find is the carrot keeps moving. If I'm on a pilot, now it has to get picked up to series. Oh, now it has to not get canceled. Now it has to turn into a global phenomenon. You have to broaden your definition of what a victory is. If a casting director sees you more than once, that means right. They like you. Call that a victory. If you get a callback, you meet the producer and the director, but you don't get the role, that's a victory.
Known in high school as Jay Rads, the wunderkind-hyphenate son of a lawyer had to plead his case under severe cross-examination to convince his parents to let him study drama. But as he says, he just knew he could be great. After a quick firing from a network pilot in Los Angeles, which his father called his big break, Josh found work on a little show called How I Met Your Mother. But that's just the beginning of the story. See you next time, off camera.